Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Sighed Callie, tossing her purse and notebook on the nearest chair and collapsing into the next one. That's yet another school that doesn't fit, that Josh can't attend. How will this end?
At some point, replied her husband Stan, there has to be something. He can't be the only kid in the country who needs a special program.
Well, he seems to be in a class by himself, no pun intended, Callie smiled wryly. Maybe that's where he'll end up anyway. Oh, dear.
She put her head in her hands.
Hang in there, honey.
Stan bent down and put an arm around her shoulders.
Somehow it's going to work out. It just has to.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about special educational needs for very special kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been this route and beyond and can offer the benefit of her many experiences. Jillian Copeland is the founder and director of the Diener School, which opened its doors in the fall of 2007. Over the last several years as an educational consultant to the special needs community, she recognized the lack of opportunity for students with attentional, sensory, learning, and language delays. After researching best practices from schools throughout the country, Jillian has created a unique program in Montgomery County, Maryland, that will serve those who otherwise are not accommodated. She and her husband have four sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Jillian.
Thank you for having me.
So you founded an entire new school because the programs you had investigated over the years did not address certain needs. What was it you were seeking?
My son is 8 years old, and he had been in a variety of programs over the last several years, none of which really met his needs. I really was looking for a holistic program, a program that understood all of his needs from the academic to the social to the emotional to the behavioral, which was very hard to find. I was also taking my son to therapies after school, pretty much all over town, and realized one day that all of these therapies were isolated from each other, and there really wasn't a lot of collaboration amongst the professionals working with my son. And I thought of the benefits that we would see if we had a more of a holistic approach, a collaborative effort from all of the professionals. And that was one of the ideas that kind of hit me, one of the light bulbs that came in when I realized, what if we had this in his school environment? Wouldn't that be so wonderful? So that was why I created the Diener School.
Would you describe the program? I know that it was a big deal to figure out this whole school and then get it all put together. And you have a specific program now that works.
We do. Our program is, again, very holistic based. It is very developmental in our approach. So wherever the kids are in the development is where we start with them and take them to the next level and hopefully keep spiraling up to take them through all the different disciplines and academic areas and keep rising and keep challenging them and stimulating them and, of course, congratulating them along the way because sometimes the efforts that they make are so much harder than what we even realize. The Diener School really was founded or was created based on a pyramid of learning. It's called the Diener School Pyramid of Learning, and it can be found on our website, which is www.thedienerschool.org, all one word. And our pyramid really evolved from visiting different schools in the area, conducting interviews with parents who have special needs children, working with professionals who work with children with needs, and taking all of this information as well as visiting other school programs and adopting their best practices into this Diener School Pyramid of Learning. And that is really our whole program in a nutshell with all the foundations of what we think are important for these kids to reach, which is the top of the pyramid, which is a healthy self-esteem.
As briefly as you can, take us through a sample day at the Diener School.
I would love to take you through a day. The morning starts, all kids come in and they have center time. And again, it varies from classroom to classroom.
And centers being different parts of the room.
Centers are different parts of the room. It could be an auditory listening program in the morning that one kid has. It could be putty, so we're using to strengthening the hands. It could be a fine motor activity. It could be a puzzle or it could be a book. And again, based on the kid's needs are what the teachers are looking at, and they assign them to a different center every morning when they come in. Then the kids have morning meeting. They talk about their day. They go over rules every day. They talk about the rules of the classroom, where to keep our hands, those important things, listening and following directions. The morning time from about 9:30 to about 10:50 is our academic time. And that is for reading, math, and language arts and writing. And our specialists usually are in the mornings, and so they might pull a child or two to work on specific goals with them, whether they're occupational therapy goals or speech and language goals, and really infuse what they're doing into our thematic program, into our academics. So, for example, if they're learning about diversity of life and life cycles and animals, the speech pathologist may take a kindergartner or two, and they may be categorizing animals or mammals. We either have a speech pathologist, an academic therapist, or an occupational therapist who joins us in the morning and splits her time between the classrooms. At 11 o'clock, which is right after snack, we have fitness for health, and our kids run and play and learn left and right, and everything is skill-based, and it is spiral curriculum that we work with, and we're working on motor skills and muscle tone and balance and coordination, and the kids absolutely love it. They come in at 12 o'clock and they have lunch, and then they have 30 minutes of recess time. And when they come in from recess, they have 30 minutes either with our developmental music therapist or our developmental art therapist, or they have yoga. And then the last hour of the day is usually for social skills. We do a short social skills lesson every day. We might add science or social studies in. And then we usually have a closure time where kids review the day, how the day was. It's sort of a reflection time. We go over who has earned their Diener School Dollars, which is our school token reward system, and then go over homework and just have a little bit of closure and quiet time. And that's it.
And the kids who are going through this day are from what age to what age?
We have kindergarten through third grade, and we're hoping to have a fourth grade next year.
What kinds of students need this kind of programming?
The kinds of students that we have are kids who have attentional issues, auditory processing or sensory dysfunction or sensory processing, language deficits, executive functioning issues, and many of our kids have social deficits. So they really just need social skills lessons and opportunities for social skills with neurotypical kids with some assistance. And that is one of the things that we do at the Diener School. Part of our program is a daily social skills lesson in the classroom. And then on Wednesdays, we take our kids to an extended day program at the Greenacre School, which is a progressive school nearby, which we love. And our Diener School students are paired with 7th and 8th grade students who also earn community service hours and are trained by me, so they know what to expect and what our objectives are with our kids. And it gives our kids an opportunity to be mainstreamed with neurotypical peers, to apply the social skills that they're learning in our program. And it also gives us the opportunity to use that as sort of a gauge or a compass to where our students are and really what skills they need to be working on in the classroom.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on very special education.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Jillian Copeland about very special educational needs and schooling. Do you envision that after X number of years of this kind of intensive program for the kids, that they would graduate from the Diener School and be quote-unquote mainstreamed?
I hope so. I think it really depends on the individual child. Some of the kids that attend our program have more severe needs than others. I do see a lot of them being mainstreamed out of our program in a year or two, transitioned into another program, whether it be a public school or another independent small school program. Our hope for every kid is that they can be mainstreamed after a period of these intensive therapeutic programs that we provide.
How would parents know if a program like this would be right for their child if they have sort of a quirky child and they haven't had the child go through a battery of tests and so on?
It's hard, but I think parents have a gut instinct as to where their children should be. I think they know their child best. For me, what I did personally with my son is I went and explored all the programs that were available to him, kind of having an idea in the back of my mind or maybe in the front of my mind as to where he should be. but looking for what kind of student he is, what kind of learner he is, whether visual, auditory, tactile learner, looking at the programs and seeing what each program provides. Some programs offer more opportunities for movement and sensory experiences. Some are more language intense, and it really depends on the needs of your kid, where your child should be. And then once you find that place, you hope that they get in.
So the best way to figure that out is to watch your child in different environments, or are there other ways?
I think so. I think observing them in different environments, having direct communication and contact with the teachers and therapists that your child is working with. Most of the therapists in various cities and different areas know a lot of the schools and the programs that are available for them. So use them as a resource. There are also educational consultants all over the country, and they know what programs are available, and they try to match the right program for your child.
It seems like it would be so hard to have a classroom of first graders with such a variety of problems to be addressed.
It is. It's very difficult. I think one of the biggest challenges is that the teachers have to differentiate their teaching methods, strategies for each individual child. And that is one of the benefits that you'll find at a lot of schools, and especially mine, because our student-to-teacher ratio is so fabulous. So we really have a teacher or professional, whether it's a therapist or teacher or assistant, working with one or two children at a time for all of our academic periods. I think that is really helpful and really important, because you really have a gauge on where this kid needs to be, and you are able to differentiate your methods and your strategies when working with different kids.
Since there clearly isn't a school like yours in every community, how can parents put together a program that would fill similar needs, maybe finding a way to augment existing school programs in their communities?
What I did was I went to the Maryland State Department of Education, and of course every state has their own Department of Education. I use them as a resource. I went to them. I explored their websites and other websites as well. I also tried to work with consultants to see what the need was out in the community. Was there a need for a school like mine? I conducted an online survey, and I had over 100 responses from parents and professionals in the area who helped me, and actually some of their ideas really went into my Diener School Pyramid of Learning, so that was very helpful. Thank you to everyone who participated in that. And using their feedback and attending support groups and trying to get an idea of what the needs are out there in this community and trying to fill a void that I really think is necessary. But the first step, I think, is to really contact the schools that are out there to see if maybe they would want to start a program with you, because it is very difficult to start up your own program in a lot of states. It's a long, tedious process. And if you don't have the time or the resources, because it can get quite expensive also, it's a good idea to maybe partner with a school that's out there, and they might be willing, once they see there is a need in the community, to create another program within their school.
Now, I assume that on board you have to have a lot of people with a lot of good credentials. How can parents best research the kinds of credentials and professionals and so forth that you've mentioned without traveling all over the country?
Parents can contact the American Occupational Therapy Association and Speech and Language Association if they need to find out if therapists are located in their area and certified to be doing what they are doing. It's very easy now with Google and all these other websites to find out a little bit more about each therapist. And I find that when you are in a support group or you find other parents, that they're really the best resource, because they have heard things about therapists, they know things about programs, their kids are in these programs, and that's really the best way to find information.
When parents are trying to select an appropriate educational setting, as you spent a lot of years trying to do, and a lot of time and effort, obviously, what kinds of general guidelines would you recommend for them?
I would recommend, first and foremost, knowing your child and what kind of learner they are, knowing what environment will best suit your child. There are many different kinds of programs out there. There are schools that have developmental approaches, progressive, experiential, traditional. There are classes that are small and there are classes that are big, and I think knowing where your child fits is really the most important thing. I would also look for other opportunities for arts and movement and music if it's something that your child is interested in, different peer groups, diversity, whatever's really important for you and your family, and obviously looking out for where your child fits, which is more important than where you fit. And that's something that a lot of parents seem to forget.
That must be very hard. It must take a tremendous amount of concentration to sit in a setting and say, okay, let's put aside my feelings about this. How would Jimmy like being in this setting?
It's very difficult. I think taking yourself out of the equation is a very difficult thing for us to do. And as a special needs parent, I'm still learning, and I know I always will be, when you need to let go of the things that might be important to you and that aren't important to your child, or the things that you think will work best for your child or you want for your child, but may not be what's really best for him or her at that time.
Jillian, could you give us some examples of some of the experiences you had and your child had in finding comfortable placement?
Of course. When my son was 4.5, I realized he wasn't ready for kindergarten, and I decided to put him in a program where I felt it was very nurturing and would be really wonderful for him socially. And it turned out that it really was a great program for him socially. However, the teacher was not a special educator, and she didn't really know how to teach my son. So providing him with the social experiences and the wonderful opportunities that he had at that time were very important to me. And I did take him to therapies in the afternoon and worked with him a lot on the academic areas that he needed to be enriched and reinforced, which is not easy. I believe we were in 12 therapies a week at that time.
And what about the rest of your family?
Well, it's an issue because I have 3 other sons, and balancing the needs and support that I need to give them was quite difficult at times. So 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I took him out of school early at 1 o'clock so I could take him to some of these therapies and then still be home for my other boys when they got home from school. It, again, was a good experience for Nicholas. However, the learning component was not there. Then he attended another school, a school for kids with needs, language and learning and sensory needs. And I felt that he got all of the academic pieces in that program that he needed, but the social and the behavioral and the emotional were missing. And then I realized maybe that's more important because I can teach him the academic pieces and he can learn those things. Right now, it's the social pieces that he needs to feel included. He needs to feel needed, and he needs to feel empowered and independent. And those were some of the things that he was not getting. So I would say that both experiences were great, but neither one of them met all of his needs. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to look at the whole child in my school. And I think it's very important to recognize the whole child. But I think a lot of parents, when we look at our kids and we see their deficits and we see the areas that need improvement, we're concerned and we tend to focus on those areas instead of looking at all of the strengths and capabilities and gifts that our children bring to us. And that is really what they need. So when people come to my program and they say, tell me about the academics, I say, we do all of the academics that all of the other schools do in our school day. We have reading and computing and language arts, writing and social studies and science. But we spend a great deal of time on allowing the kids to A, play and be kids, and B, to find out who they are and what they're good at. And we really congratulate them and praise them for what they're good at, so that when the things that are hard for them come around, and they do quite often with these kids, they can get through them and still focus on the things that they're good at and feel good about themselves.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on very special education.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Jillian Copeland about very special educational needs and schooling.
Do you find with kids like this who either have kinesthetic strengths or kinesthetic weaknesses, that piece of it is really important?
It is very important. It really is. A lot of the kinesthetic challenges or fine and gross motor challenges that these kids have really need to be addressed, and kids need practice every day. In the traditional school environment, there's really not a lot of time for that. In our school, we do a lot of different sensory and motor experiences for the kids so that not only are their bodies ready and available to learn, but they are getting some of their motor needs met. And some of them are gross motor, some are sensory, visual motor, fine motor. So we have, 15 minutes of handwriting at the end of our gross motor fitness for health period. We have daily opportunities in the morning during our morning meeting for brain gym, which are exercises where you cross the midline of your body. And there are a lot of benefits to using brain gym in the classroom. We have a lot of opportunities for hand strengthening with putty and different types of rubber bands and wiki sticks. We bring in a lot of games and toys because they're fun. And we can work on skills and we can strengthen their skills while the kids are having fun. They don't even realize that they're doing it.
So one of the things that you've been finding is that the physical piece really is significant in terms of the learning.
One of the books that I read and I continue to use as a resource, which is a book that is called The Connection Between Movement and Learning. And it is by a woman who lives in Hawaii. Her name is Carla Hannaford. And I am a true believer, even before reading this book, that the connection of movement and learning is critical. And we do a lot of movement in our program. And if you read the book, you'll see why. We have a lot of bouncy, wiggly kids, kids with attentional deficits and hyperactivity disorder. And a lot of our kids, instead of taking medication at this point, we really are providing them with tools in the classroom. So whether they're the big exercise TheraBalls that they sit on instead of sitting on a chair, and it allows them to sit and bounce while they're working, different tools, different things to put in their seats, little gadgets and gizmos for them to play with while sitting in circle time. When they read, they get to sit in a beanbag, so they get that feedback that they need. And sometimes during the day, if a kid just really needs to get out and move a little bit, we'll bring them into our sensory room, and we put them on a swing, and we swing around, and we sing songs, and we count, and we do letters and numbers. Because again, it's that connection between movement and learning for them, and it's very soothing for kids who really need to have some movement in their day.
The other thing I'm hearing from you is the significance of rhythm.
Yes.
Auditory stuff.
Yes. We do have a wonderful auditory processing program that I also think makes us real unique in that we use processing, we use headphones, and we use a program called the listening headphone with every kid. Right now, 4 out of 5 of our kids are using this program. They were assessed by an audiologist who works with a sensory team on our staff. And they come in and they really look at it from an integrative approach. So they look at it from a sensory piece, from an auditory piece, from a visual piece, and they set up a program for each kid. It's about 15 to 20 minutes where they listen to either music or a book on tape, depending on where their skill levels are and their auditory processing level is. It's really interesting, the research that we find on auditory processing. A lot of children hear out of their left ear, and we want them to hear out of their right ear predominantly. You need both ears to listen. But what happens when you listen from your left ear is that the information has to go to the right side of your brain and then back to the left to get processed. And that's part of the processing issue. It's very concrete. And there's a lot of clutter in there when you don't have a direct pathway from the right ear to the language part of the brain, which is in the left part of the brain. So one of the things we do with our kids is we assess how they're hearing. We use an audiologist. We have special headphones so that we strengthen their right ear, and that will hopefully help them with processing information. My son went through auditory training for years. He still does. We do it a couple times a year. It's an intensive program. And the surge in language and his abstract thinking and his ability to retrieve information are 3 things that we have seen significant improvements in. It was very, very impressive. So I highly recommend, if you are starting a program, if you are looking at a program and your child has auditory issues, if you're seeing an occupational therapist, ask them about auditory training programs. We have a developmental music therapist who is on staff twice a week, who comes in to work with the kids on rhythm, timing, and balance as well.
Jillian, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
Well, first, my website, which again is www.thediener.com. School, all one word, thedeanerschool.org. My phone number at the Deaner School is 301-299-4602. Another resource we use a lot is LD Online. It's a learning disabilities website with a lot of fabulous resources, articles, books. And another one of my favorites is Rick Lavoie, and his website is ricklavoie.com. And he is a social skills specialist. I don't know his formal title, but he is fabulous and has done a lot of research in the last 30 years on the importance of social skills in our daily routines and our classrooms, and he's wonderful. Some of the fabulous books that I have used as resources are The Connection Between Movement and Learning by Carla Hannaford, How the Special Need Brain Learns by David Souza, and that's spelled S-O-U-S-S-A, and All Kinds of Minds by Mel Levine, which is an absolute favorite, and one more, which is The Out of Sync Child, and that is by Carol Kranowitz.
Well, you have been an incredible resource for all of our listeners and for us. And so, Jillian Copeland, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us understand about special needs education.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 347 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.